let's look at this RFP. Who can compete? Is this RFP skewed in such a way that certain kinds of groups will not be able to compete for the work? That's what I would consider part of this learning curve of of testing. And I appreciate the point that you make, and I think that we share, which is this is not a defensive exercise. This is a process of jointly learning about how to do things better and differently.
Yeah, Commissioner Fish, I believe that you have the point right there. It's taking a real look, and when we start talking about, we look at things like RFPs, and they turn out because they are the way that has always been done, that they are exclusionary just by the fact that they're there. That we have bureaucracies that will always stay in place. I mean, elected officials, you know, bureaucracies go on longer than elected officials, unfortunately, and you have a chance to impact that right now. And so our thing now is how to learn and how can we include people that have been excluded all the time, even in the decision-making processes. There's points of decisions where decisions are being made and you have people of color not even being at the table to offer insight into how can we get these resources to these communities in a better way. So, you know, that enlightened thinking, how can we go outside of the box to include people in their opinions so we can get resources where they're badly needed?
I know my colleagues want to jump in, but I would simply say that as we develop these new models and we experiment with things, and I think the NOFA, and I'll toot Margaret's horn because she's worked hard with coalition partners to get to this point, is a good example of a new way of doing things that's more transparent, but the proof is in the results. So when the results are announced, we'll look to see under this process of a more transparent way who is getting the money, which projects are being funded. But then to the extent we have successes, I'd like to find a way to make sure we share that information, because I think there's a sincere commitment to address a lot of these issues. And I think to the extent there are wins along the way, we also need to be able to share that as markers for not just other bureaus, but other governments.
So Commissioner Fritz wants to say a few words, and then I'm going to say a few words, and we're going to meet again.
Okay. Yes, this is going to be an ongoing conversation. Thank you all for being here, and thank you for the great amount of work that's gone into preparing this report and then bringing it to us. It's shocking to see not only the disparities, but also that in almost all categories, those disparities have grown. And we recently had the State of Black Oregon report that the Urban League brought to us. And again, in 17 years, basically no improvement. And that is not acceptable. That's not the Portland that we want to be. We're talking in the Portland plan about equity in every part of what the Portland plan needs to be. The mayor and I are talking about equity. And people in the community who are coming to the Portland plan are also talking about equity. We need to broaden that to the whole community, and we need to have more of these conversations. And we need to start with ourselves right here in the city of Portland and what we can do with hiring and promotion practices to be more equitable. It was shocking to me. I think the recent law that was passed in Arizona has been a smack in the face to everybody, where they actually legalized racial profiling. We in Oregon don't have any laws that prohibit racial profiling in motorist and pedestrian stops. And when I was looking at some of the other disparities, in Arizona, the graduation disparity is 23%, whereas here it's 36%. So in addition to taking action to express outrage about the legalization of profiling, we need to put our own house in order, and we need to look at what we can do right here in the city of Portland to make it more equitable, because that's really who we are, that's who we want to be, and I'm certainly committed to working with you. I appreciate the request for an all-council work session. I would assume it would be a work session. I'd be very happy to participate in that. We need to look at the specific actions that you have done the research to tell us what needs to be done, and then we need to look at how we can get it done. So thank you very much.
Well, obviously, as someone who helped promote funding for this, I started out very hopeful about this project, but you have far exceeded my expectations in bringing forth a sad, shameful, and very compelling reality that is amongst us. Portland is recognized nationally and internationally as a great city, but what your report shows is that is its greatness is just not available to all Portlanders, and that that exclusion breaks along the lines of ethnicity and race and factors that are not notorious. So we talk about wanting to be the most sustainable city, but we also need to spend equal passion in wanting to be the city of the most equal opportunity. And we've got a lot of work to do. And the great thing about your work, as difficult as it is for a progressive city to have to listen to, because it isn't, I think, it shows that we're not living up to our own ideals of what it means to be a fair and just city. It also is a roadmap, though, a really important roadmap, and that is, I think, very hopeful on ways that we can move forward in very concrete and accountable ways. I would add another recommendation, and that is we've got to start being able to talk about race in the city. And it's we've got to figure out a way to talk about race in the city with 70% plus percentage of the residents and workers in the city that are Caucasian and white. And so that's going to be very difficult to figure out how to do that in a way that it doesn't feel like to the white community as a zero-sum game, that I have to give up something in order for somebody else to get a fair and equitable opportunity. But this is good. This is great work. And I want to thank you for that. And we will follow up. So we'll meet with you. I'd like to read it. And follow up with you and figure out the best way forward. So thank you all very much. Really appreciate it.
And Carmen, it's great to see you again.
We'll have a 3-minute recess before we go on to our next item.
Carmen, can you get this electronically? Email?
Thank you. Hey, man, thank you. Yeah, well,
I think we're set.
I like the idea of being
set. A Tuesday morning and have the whole council present. That's
what we need. I mean, nobody's calling because I know there's no racist in there. It's not a matter of that. How can we make it better?
What are the policy? What are the policy choices we're making? What are the barriers?
You know, when we start getting right input at the right points where, I mean,
I think it's the sweet spot that we can hit. It's not a human rights
question. I felt funny that time.
Stop!
Very
good. That's the point.
Hearing?
Yes.
I noticed you build up.
Thank you.
No. You had information to give, and you're trying to give it.
Take it in, Teresa. Hi there. Thank you. Did you have Gerald?
No.
Director of
tracking traffic. It's on the way.
How this works? Do you have to sign up to say anything?
There is a sign-in sheet there. So talk to the city auditor about that.
Tracking traffic called 10 minutes ago. So 700. It's just 3.
Okay. If folks that are planning to leave could facilitate your own departure, that would be great. More democracy.
The new attorney, Erica?
Yeah, she told me she met you.
You want to do that first or after?
I'll stay as long as I have to.
Did he leave already? Oh, no. I think we're going to be quick on sidewalk. You want to do census first?
You could vote and then just... Oh, you mean vote in advance before getting called up?
Okay.
I think you'd need the mayor back.
And he would have to call him. Okay. Can you just be...
Can he really quick?
Okay.
I'll do it
telephonically. All right. The city council will come back from recess. We're going to hear item number 643. Sue, can you please read the title for item number 643?
Item 643, accept report on 2010 Census Everybody Counts.
Commissioner Fish.
Thank you, Mayor. I'd like to welcome forward our distinguished, it's a little noisy here. Wait 1 second. I'd like to invite forward County Commissioner Deborah Kafori, Mark Jolin, Nicole Maher, and Sanji Balaji. Is Sanji here?
I think actually Colin McCormick.
Colin McCormick, please come forward. Mayor and colleagues, I'm honored to introduce this item this afternoon, which is a report to the council, a brief report on the activities of the 2010 Census Complete Count Committee. And I have the privilege of co-chairing the Complete Count Committee with Multnomah County Commissioner Deborah Kafori, who is also the county lead on housing issues. She is here today to introduce the presentation and the community partners who have been working tirelessly to make sure that we get a complete count. Deborah, it's always an honor to have you here, and thanks for joining us.
Twice in one day. Hey. Can you believe it? So lucky. Deborah Kafori, Multnomah County. Thank you very much for allowing us this opportunity today to talk to you a little bit about the census. I'm sure you all know you've hopefully been barraged by the ads and the hits of why the census is important, but I'll just run through real quick. Basically, it boils down to three things. It's important for the information that we collect. You just heard a very powerful report about who lives in our community, and that information comes from census materials. So we are very lucky and fortunate that we are going to have new numbers next year to help us inform us who lives in our community, what we look like, how old we are, what our race and ethnicity, and so on. The census is also important because it brings money to our community. And for every 100 people not counted, Multnomah County stands to lose $1.2 million every 10 years. And that works out to about $1,200 per person per year. The last reason that it's important is because it's the law. The census is the foundation of our democracy. It's a chance for every person in our community, no matter how old you are, no matter where you were born, what your name is, it's a chance for every single person to participate. When we looked to do the census count this year, 2010, we looked around our community and saw that things look a little bit different than they did 10 years ago. We are in an economic downturn. There's a higher level of distrust in government. And the folks that we have relied on in past census counts to help get the word out our community partners were also struggling. They were having trouble raising finances. Their work was being stretched thin, and they didn't have the time and energy to devote to helping us as they usually do. So we decided, through the great work of my co-chair, Commissioner Fish, and our community partners from all over Multnomah County, that we would try to do things differently this year. So through a group process, we decided that one thing that we could do was to help our community members get the word out to their communities, the communities in which they're the trusted and respected voices. We decided that it would be better if we could help them financially. So we proceeded to raise $150,000, both and in in-kind contributions, to give mini grants to these community partners to help them do the work. And I'm going to now turn it over to...
Deborah, if I could just acknowledge that I want to thank my colleagues and the mayor for contributing $25,000 from the city toward that enterprise. And, you know, it was interesting that when Commissioner Cafori and I were trying to figure out a better model for how to do the outreach, we both, of course, fell back on what was most familiar to us, which is an old-fashioned campaign. And by enlisting nonprofits that were skilled gatekeepers that knew how to do culturally competent outreach, and by funding them, what we've done is we've generated a campaign to supplement the work of the census. And I appreciate that my colleagues agreed to that investment and that the United Way was a good custodian of those dollars. So,
and for those of you who understand campaigns, this was a different sort of campaign in that we were actually targeting the folks that don't usually vote. We were targeting, usually in a campaign, you target the 3 out of 4 voters or the 4 out of 4 voters. And we were trying to get people to turn in their census who don't speak English, who maybe haven't lived here very long, they're sleeping on their friend's couch. I mean, we really had a hard group of people to try to target. And I want to send another thank you to the mayor for his great work with the LGBTQ community. And the PSAs that you helped produce were fabulous. Thank you. Colin?
Good afternoon, Mr. Mayor, commissioners. Thank you for your time. I am Colin McCormick, representing United Way of the Columbia Willamette. I would like to talk today a little bit about our grants process and United Way's involvement with this effort. The Complete Counts Committee created a grants subcommittee who discussed and planned what they would like to see in a grants process over a number of meetings. When the time came to roll out an RFP and evaluate applications, a ratings panel was formed made up of individuals who were not linked to one of the applications. The members of that panel represented the city, the county, PDC, the Census Bureau, and United Way. The panel supported an approach that would encourage collaboration within target communities, an effort to have the broadest impact possible. Ultimately, the group approved 9 applications for 16 different community-based organizations. With credit due to Commissioners Cafori and Fish, more resources than anticipated were raised, which allowed for additional funding of 3 nonprofits serving seniors and people with disabilities. The United Way was very interested and involved in getting involved in this project for a number of reasons. First of all, the United Way is committing to supporting diverse and underrepresented communities, including but not limited to racial, tribal, ethnic, youth and seniors, people with disabilities, those experiencing homeless, and without regard to country of origin, in achieving equal access to services and success and full participation in our local communities. United Way believes that funding and other resources to facilitate that goal should come from individuals, families, communities, private interests, at the philanthropic world, and government as well. As such, we wanted to be a part of the effort to bring every federal dollar possible into the city and to Multnomah County. United Way actively seeks collaboration with other funding partners and through our grants process. Collaboration has been a hallmark throughout this process, and the tremendous efforts of staff and representatives of the city and county governments, our funders, and the nonprofits who have and continue to carry out this tremendous work is worthy of notice. With that as a segue, I'd like to share the full list of funders and community organizations who have contributed to this significant project. Our funders were the Bank of America, the City of Portland, Collins Foundation, Comcast, Equity Foundation, Kaiser Permanente, Legacy Health Systems, Metro Multifamily Housing Association, Nike, Northwest Health Foundation, Oregon Community Foundation, Penny Family Fund, PGE, Providence, The Standard, U.S. Bank, United Way of the Columbia Willamette, and Wells Fargo. The many grantees serving their respective communities included the Africa House, African Women's Coalition, Center for Intercultural Organizing, Oregon Action, Self-Enhancement Incorporated, Urban League, Asian Health and Fit Service Center, the Asian Family Center, Catholic Charities, Russian Oregon Social Services, El Programa Hispano, Hacienda CDC, Latino Network, Native American Rehabilitation Association of the Northwest Incorporated, Native American Youth and Family Center, the ARC of Multnomah and Clackamas Counties, Cascadia Behavioral Healthcare, Elders in Action, and JOIN. Thank you. I know those were long lists, but with the tremendous effort involved, I thought it fitting to share all of those names. And with that, it's my honor to introduce a great community leader and my former boss, Nicole Maher.
Could I also just, before we welcome Nicole back, to say that we want to thank Mark Levy and Howard Klink and the whole team at the United Way who have embraced this. And when a certain participant in the City Club Forum was knocked out for other reasons, Mr. Levy pinch hit and did a much better job than this commissioner would have done. So we want to thank him for his leadership on this work.
Thank you.
I'm here to talk a little bit about one of the efforts that took place in the Native American community. And while NAIA Family Center was the fiscal agent, the leadership and the real work really took place with a collaboration between the Portland Indian Leaders Roundtable, the Confederated Tribes of Siletz Indians, and the Youth and Elders Council. And with a $10,000 grant from this process, these groups worked collaboratively together to hire several young adults as interns, and those youth did some phenomenal work. They contacted 750 households in the Native community to remind them to turn their census form in. The collaborative efforts organized 40 adults to be tested and trained to become potentially census workers as well, of which three were hired, although I will say that over half scored above a 95% on their test. They also were able to set up and do census outreach in many organizations throughout the community, both tribal and Native nonprofits, and it has, we believe, had significant impact on our community. Our community has gone from a place of viewing the census as a real point of frustration to really looking at this as a social justice campaign to ensure that the rest of Portland knows that we are a large and thriving community. And we're looking forward to seeing the results. Thanks. And I'd like to introduce one of my favorite people, Mark Jolin.
The love fest.
Welcome, Mark.
See, I'll try to speak up. Mayor Adams, Commissioners, I'm Mark Jolin. I'm the director of JOIN. Throughout this process, we have had a homelessness subcommittee made up of Impact Northwest, Human Solutions, Central City Concern, Janus Youth, and JOIN. And we had representatives from the Housing Bureau and from the county there as well. And our goal was to target three subpopulations within the homeless community: those who are doubled up couch surfing, those in our emergency and transitional housing programs, and then those folks who are sleeping on the street. And the Census Bureau has got strategies themselves for all of those groups, and our goal was to support those strategies to make them as effective as possible. With the mini-grant that we received, the subcommittee received, we hired a community census trainer who was able to spend 2 months going out and worked with over 35 different agencies, engaged with over 400 frontline workers, building managers, case managers, to explain to them the importance of the census, how it would work, and with the goal being that they would then go and leverage their relationships with folks that they were working with or whose buildings they managed to get them to participate. So she reached those 400 individuals, and they hopefully in turn reached thousands. We also put on a number of community events around the census at various agencies, ice cream socials, all kinds of things, just to get people excited about the census and get them to come and engage. And then the liaison also really worked closely with the different agencies to communicate their concerns with the Census Bureau. So if an agency felt like they weren't going to be counted, we could help with that. Or if they didn't like the way that the Census Bureau was engaging with them, we could try to engage that process as well. We also relied heavily on the Coordinating Committee to End Homelessness as a resource. So the Census Bureau came to the Coordinating Committee to give presentations and share timelines. The Outreach and Engagement Subcommittee of the Coordinating Committee helped the Census look at their and develop their street count method, helped them identify sites where people camp, and then also at the end of the day helped train some of their enumerators who went out and did the street count. The street count itself, which was a big effort, it's a one night, they put hundreds and hundreds of enumerators on the street. We had a last minute change in date that complicated a little bit our ability to support that effort, but we were able to do some training for the enumerators. We had a group of seven homeless people who went out with targeted groups of those enumerators in areas that we worried would be hard to count along with some agency staff. I'd say that the Census Bureau on the whole really did a very good job working with us, took our feedback throughout the process. They made some steps to try to hire people experiencing homelessness to be part of the process. And overall, the feedback that we got from the agencies whose clients and participants were counted was that the enumerators did a pretty good job. There are things that we're hoping to improve next time around. There's a report that's being put together to kind of identify some of those things, but on the whole, I think things went pretty well. We don't have a number from them, obviously, at this point, but reading between the lines, we think that the method of counting people in the service agencies and on the street has probably yielded a number that's within the realm of what our own methods have yielded in our shelter count and our street count. So the one place where we don't know yet how well we did is on capturing people who are doubled up. We know we did a lot of outreach, but it's going to be very hard to know exactly who of the people who mailed back their forms were mailing back from a doubled up situation. So the Homelessness Subcommittee really appreciates the political leadership from Commissioners Fish and Kafori. Really appreciate the foundations and companies that stepped up on the mini-grants. We could not have done this work without that support. And I will say that the Census Bureau, the feedback we've gotten from them is that they feel like because of the extra effort we put in locally, we got much closer to a complete count than other jurisdictions that they've been in touch with. So thank you very much.
And Mayor, it's characteristic of Mark to be understated in his comments and deflect credit for his work. The reality is that this area of the count's been the hardest to address in the country, and it was the biggest sort of weakness in the plan that the Census had, the sort of national plan they were going to unveil here. And what Mark did is led an effort among providers to think of how we could do this in a better way and get an honest count. And we actually think that the methodology they use and the refinements could be exported in the next census to strengthen what we do nationally. And I should also note that Deborah and I were very proud to join with Mark a couple weeks ago at the opening of Join's new center at 82nd, which the county and the city have supported, but most importantly, bring vitally needed services in our community closer to people in East Portland who desperately need them. So Mark, we're very proud of the partnership.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Deborah, can we also acknowledge Becky Lee, who's not here?
Yes, thank you.
Becky, who is on your team, took the lead on so much of the work. And in fairness, you did more than 50% of this. We were co-chairs, but this would not be the success it is without your leadership. So thank you, Deborah, for everything and for your great work in this enterprise.
Thank you.
Oh, this is a report.
But there is no actual report.
It's an oral report.
Oh, is there a motion to...
So moved.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. Sue, would you please call the vote?
Fish.
Thank you all for your outstanding... Thank you all as you leave for the outstanding report. And just to remind people, the stakes here, our fair share of $400 billion of federal discretionary money, a sixth congressional district for Oregon, and a formula-based... the formula which impacts everything from the roads to our schools to our healthcare facilities. So getting this count right is vitally important. And I, again, want to thank my colleague at the county, Deborah Kafori, and everyone who's been working tirelessly on this project. Aye.
Saltzman?
Good work. Aye.
Fritz?
Well, Commissioner Fish and Commissioner Kafur, you're both very busy people, and yet you stepped up to do this, to help the people of Multnomah County get this very important count done, and you did it in very innovative ways, so I appreciate that. If you're watching at home and you haven't sent in your census yet, there's still time. Please send it in. Aye.
Adams.
I want to thank Commissioner Nick Fish and County Commissioner Deborah Kafur for leading up local efforts on the government side, and all the partners that were mentioned, and all the volunteers that have been part of us. Thank you very much. Aye. All right. That gets us to time certain at 3 o'clock. We are running late. Sue, would you please read the title for item number 642?
Enact a portion of the public sidewalk management plan by creating a legal framework to manage usage of the sidewalk based on Americans with Disabilities Act requirements.
So we've been working to further refine and improve these drafts that have been out for 7 weeks. And so for discussion today, I'll recognize Commissioner Fritz.
Thank you, Mayor. I'd like to move the substitute Exhibit A and the substitute ordinance, which has been distributed, and which the copies are available for the public.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. Sue, would you please call the vote on the substitution request?
Fish.
Aye.
Fritz.
We're going to go through the what's in the substitute, but essentially it's responding to the feedback that we heard last week and at the Sidewalks Advisory Committee on Monday. Aye.
Saltzman.
Aye.
Adams.
Aye. Okay. I'll go through the items that I worked on, and then maybe you could go through the items you worked on. So it was important. So looking at the substitute ordinance, the underline and strikeout G, there was a concern that as time moves on and folks in our positions, we might change, we might not be here, that it be very clear that it is our goal to provide an opportunity for people to stand and sit on every block face, on every sidewalk, and that it is our legislative intent and now part of the legislation in G, on the last page of the substitute ordinance, that it would be for life safety reasons only that would not be allowed. So, for example, a good example of concerns about safety would be, let's say, in front of Powell's Books. The sidewalk is 4 odd feet, 5 feet wide. Sitting on a sidewalk like that would force people potentially in the street. And or sitting on the curb would have folks very close to cars, so that it would be the director of transportation, though, would have to proactively, affirmatively note the block faces where, for safety reasons only, where there would not be, where the whole sidewalk would be maintained for pedestrian use. That's G. The sidewalk would have to be marked, and those exceptions to the basic rule would have to be noted on a map, on a map of the area, which would be maintained for public on the website. H, and again, it would have to be for life safety reasons. And this is to address the ability of folks to sit and lie. Commissioner Fritz, you want to go over yours?
Yes, thank you. Because essentially what we're doing is, as the mayor said, is trying to make sure that where there's a safe place to do so, there's a safe place for people to move along the sidewalk, and there's a safe place to sit and lie and do whatever else one wants to do in the near vicinity on the same sidewalk. So it's like dividing up the street into traffic lanes and parking lanes, that we don't want through traffic in the parking lanes, and don't want people sitting in the through traffic lanes. So I added K, which is underneath the two sections that Mayor Adams just mentioned, which requires the Portland Police Bureau to give an oral warning and the opportunity to comply before issuing a written warning. and especially for the first 6 months, that we want to make sure that it's mostly about education and information and making requests rather than enforcement, and so that the written warning would be maybe issued if the oral warning does not prompt compliance. So that's that one. And then in the actual code, we added language. This was after the discussion at the Sidewalks Advisory Committee on Monday. We added language about that if somebody does need to go before a judge, that it's an affirmative defense that the behavior, if the behavior is close to the line and the person thought that they were complying, that the judge will consider that they have complied unless there's clear markings on the sidewalk. So it's intended to help folks who do end up before a judge if they were intending to comply and not willfully disobeying, to help them to get that ticket canceled. And then we had a discussion last week with Commissioner Leonard and I regarding freedom of speech and freedom of assembly. And the whole point of this ordinance is to require that there is freedom of speech and freedom of assembly on every single sidewalk for every single person in the city of Portland. So we're not going to have an exempt. This what I'm deleting is the exemption that people could assemble or have freedom of speech expressions in the pedestrian zone. Anybody can stand in the pedestrian zone or be in a mobility device. The key thing about the pedestrian through zone is the ability to move quickly and if asked. So anybody can assemble in the pedestrian zone. Anybody can assemble in the other in the sitting zone. The key thing is that we want, if anybody wants to sit to do a freedom of expression or assembly, we still want them to sit in the area so that other people can get through on the sidewalk. This is all about making sure that there's a space where people will not be disturbed if they want to sit or lie. They can be there as long as they like. They can say whatever they want. And there's a place that if people want to be have through passage that they get to do that. So we didn't feel that there was a particular need to have a freedom of speech and assembly because the whole ordinance is about freedom of speech and assembly. So we took that part out. We also deleted language in the ordinance regarding police officers, whether in plain clothes or in uniform. We had a discussion about this at the Sidewalks Advisory Committee, and actually it was the minority who felt this language was objectionable. I thought that their argument was compelling, and police officers, by being police officers, can be plain clothes or not, or in uniform, so that we didn't think that that particular language needed to be in the ordinance, and so we removed that language about the plain or plain clothes or uniformed.
Warren Jimenez from the mayor's office. I just wanted to stress, and just for clarity's sake, that really the intent with G and H and also throughout this ordinance is to bring more clarity when folks are actually out there on the sidewalks. So that includes marking the zones in the higher traffic areas, and you can see in H providing those marks where in life safety reasons that we don't have allow that area, those sitting activities in those areas. So we're trying to make this as clear as possible, as well as providing maps and online maps that dictate these areas, and just to make that really, really clear.
And on the sidewalk itself.
That's correct.
And there, we have an assistant district attorney to provide us additional information on the concerns about. Hi.
Yes.
How are you?
I'd be happy to come forward.
Lori. Abraham?
It's actually Abraham.
I knew that.
Sorry. All right. Lori Abraham on behalf of the DA's office. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Council members.
So there have been concerns raised about that this leads to, can lead to criminal prosecution. And wanted to air out this issue in terms of you're the office that deals with these. How do you deal with these? Has it led to criminal prosecutions?
Well, what I can tell you is this, Mayor Adams, is that our office does not actually review violation-level offenses under the criminal law. So for point of information, there are three levels of criminal offenses. They are felony, misdemeanor, and violation-level offenses. It used to be that we talked more about infractions. So some people, when they think of a traffic infraction, that is actually a violation-level offense. Violations are non-arrestable, non-jailable criminal offenses. They don't carry jail as a penalty, so therefore there cannot be an arrest warrant issued for the person when they couldn't possibly go to jail if they were actually convicted of the offense. So for violation-level offenses, there are not arrest warrants issued at any point. Our office doesn't actually look at these violations, like I said, and review them because we took the posture many, many years ago that we handle misdemeanors and felonies, not violations. However, a violation could come as part of a misdemeanor or felony arrest. So it is possible we would look at it then. I can tell you, I don't represent the court, and I should make that clear. I'll preface my remarks that way. I can tell you, though, historically, how the court handles violations. Obviously, there are violation-level offenses that are running a red light, right? That's an example of a violation-level offense. In the city code, you have things like not riding a bicycle on the sidewalk in the no-bike zone, which is downtown Portland, essentially. Those are violation-level offenses. When police issue a citation for a violation-level offense, they either go to traffic court if it is a traffic coming out of the traffic code violation, or if they are non-traffic, they come out of the city code, or they're non-traffic out of the ORS, they go to community court. So in community court, when they get violation-level offenses that are by themselves, they're standalone violation-level offenses, they have a standard offer that they give people, which is you can pay a fine, or you can do 8 hours of community service work. Now, if you've been through community court many times, that will start escalating upwards. But the general first time there, you can do 8 hours of community service work, and your citation is then dismissed. If you come through community court a second or third or fourth or how many times you've been there, they won't dismiss the citation. They'll still give you the option of doing community service work, though, rather than a fine. I can't ever say never, because you never know. I suppose a judge could, on their own, decide to put out a contempt warrant for somebody if they felt that person needed to show up in their presence. And judges do that for a variety of reasons. I've never seen it done on a violation-level offense when somebody's failed to appear. But to give you an example about how the previous sidewalk obstruction ordinance worked, when people came to community court on those citations, if they were there, they chose whether they wanted the fine, whether they wanted the community service. Sometimes they could tell the judge they didn't want either, and the judge would go along with that. It's up to a judge, of course, with each individual person, what they're going to do. And I can't always tell you what is going to happen, but I know from experience on those citations that most of the time they either took the fine, took the community service, or sometimes they even got a sentence of discharge, which is no sentence at all. If they fail to appear, and this is what happens in general with all violations, then the judge has a right by law to find the person guilty, even though they're not there. They're guilty in absentia. A default judgment is entered, and a fine is entered against the person. That fine then goes into the Oregon Department of Revenue system and acts as a judgment, essentially like a civil judgment would as well, that eventually, if that person gets any money back from the state, the money will be taken out. I don't know whether they ever make any effort to go and get that money. I have no knowledge of that because I don't work for the Department of Revenue.
Is an arrest warrant ever issued?
An arrest warrant cannot technically be issued ever on a violation-level offense.
Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Thank you very much.
Thanks.
All right. We'll move to how many people have signed up?
22.
All right. We'll do 2 minutes each.
Come up three at a time.
And testimony is limited to the amendments.
Come up three at a time, please. And I'm sorry, Arwin Bird, Danita Fry, and Emily Godfrey.
Good afternoon, Council, Mayor Adams. I'm here representing the Human Rights Commission and have a letter that will be presented to you that I'd like to read into the record. Mayor Adams and members of the Council, on May 5th, 2010, the Human Rights Commission, HRC, reviewed the proposed sidewalk management ordinance with the intent of determining our position on the ordinance and our role in ensuring that city policies such as the sidewalk management plan be implemented fairly and justly in our community. Based on our mission and commitment to further the principles embodied in the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, we believe the ordinance infringes on human rights and we cannot support it. Several concerns arose during our discussion, which we would like to communicate to you. To begin, we believe that the Title and focus of the ordinance does not accurately represent the intent of the ordinance. The Americans with Disabilities Act is the crux of the ordinance. However, the community perception and understanding of this measure is much broader. Members of the disabilities community have communicated concerns to us regarding the dynamics of this ordinance has created. It unintentionally pits communities against each other while not considering other effective methods to provide sidewalk passage and access. For example, curb improvements may make a greater impact than managing sidewalk usage. From the HRC perspective, the ordinance restricts individual rights and creates segregated zones on sidewalks that may unnecessarily separate people from one another. These restrictions and separations affirm an existing negative bias in our city's approach to people with mental illness, alcohol and drug addictions, and people who are poor and homeless. The ordinance grants police the authority to move people who are, quote, are in the way, without addressing the root causes of their presence on the sidewalks and without guaranteeing humane places to rest. The ordinance also creates enforcement challenges which could lead to further negative impacts. We are convinced that citation reports will show a disparate impact on these members of our community. With your permission, May, I just have one more paragraph to read.
Sure, go ahead.
We want to assure Council that if the ordinance passes, the Human Rights Commission is prepared to play an active role in reviewing citation reports. We understand that the Sharing Public Sidewalks Advisory Committee will receive enforcement data, and we will work with this committee to analyze enforcement patterns. Our Community and Police Relations Committee will request an opportunity to evaluate the Police Bureau's plan to enforce a sidewalk management plan and provide feedback and recommendations. We are also prepared to provide assistance and leadership with further dialogues between affected communities to address intergroup tensions and misunderstandings. Thank you for the opportunity to provide our perspective on this significant community issue.
Thank you very much. Appreciate your testimony again. Hi.
Hi.
We failed to introduce ourselves. You guys can introduce yourselves, too.
Good afternoon, Council, Mayor Adams. I'm Donita Fry. I am a Human Rights Commissioner, also part of the Native American Youth and Family Center. I appreciate the opportunity for you to hear the information that's presented to you today. Also serving on the Human Rights Police Community Relations Committee as well, too, and just wanted to amplify the fact that our concerns over the human rights violations involved in this ordinance and support the
human rights. Can you tell me what you think those human rights violations are?
Well, there are potential implications for many. My perspective individually comes from the fact that I'm a part of the Native American community, and as so, we experience the highest rate of homelessness and bias in racial profiling and all of those reasons that lead up to being present in the streets and part of that population that potentially could be heavily impacted from the citations issued for obstructing access on the sidewalks. Overall, the ordinance doesn't get at the root of what causes the reason for people to be present on the sidewalks. There's an immense list of human rights violations that could be viewed behind that reason. We had discussion at last night's meeting about our concern over not getting at the core root of why people are homeless on the streets or what we can do as a city to hold up those needs rather than this ordinance, which doesn't seem to address those issues.
Hi, Emily Gottfried, Human Rights Commissioner. I reiterate what those two said, and I wanted to point out regarding one of your amendments under Section G regarding the benches and chairs, more benches might be helpful in allowing more people to have a legitimate place to sit. I want to reiterate what Danita said. This ordinance is more like a Band-Aid. It doesn't reach the root causes. It doesn't give people who don't have a place to be during the day any place to go. It just gives them a place that they can't be. And that's just not humane.
Right. And this is, as you heard last time, we make a significant investment in the other aspects of and the many other aspects of this issue. More than any other government, local government in the region. And we'll continue, and in my last proposed budget working with Commissioner Fish, we increased funding for affordable housing and homeless services, even though we cut almost every other aspect of city government from current service levels. So we take a balanced approach. If you were to look only at this, I would understand and go with your point of view. But having courtesy and compassion on the sidewalks is what we're attempting to accomplish here. And we invest in the aspects as well in what you're talking about. So reasonable people can disagree, but, you know, $109 million last year in homeless programs and affordable housing and building one of the nation's most innovative resource access centers, and we're going to stay at it. This is by far not the majority of what we do, but we do have a responsibility of trying to manage the sidewalks with courtesy and compassion.
And Commissioner Gottfried, it does, the ordinance says that people have the right to stand anywhere on the sidewalk or be in a mobility device anywhere on the sidewalk, and it specifically says they have the right to sit in line, do whatever they want on outside of the pedestrian zone. So it does give a humane place to rest. So that was why I didn't understand the Human Rights Commission's letter. I appreciate the clarification, and I also appreciate your willingness to work with this Sidewalks Advisory Committee to monitor the enforcement. Thank you.
We carefully looked at the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, which is what we base our work on, and we found many places in the Universal Declaration of Human Rights that we felt were violated in this ordinance. And we do understand.
Did you look at our budget? Did you look at the city's budget?
Oh, the city's budget.
We have not yet, as far as putting a human rights lens on it. I would like to add that I really appreciate the work that you are all doing. I think it seems like from what I've heard from all of you that we have a shared intent in terms
Absolutely.
Of the level of compassion and desire to provide places for people to be able to rest. I think the disagreement for us comes in whether or not this ordinance will provide that.
Well, actually, you go on and say that it doesn't provide for the kinds of investments that everyone up here
right.
believes in as well. And that's true in terms of only looking at this ordinance. But during the testimony last time, I just offered the facts in terms of how much we're investing in all of the other services, which is more than all the other local governments combined on an annualized basis. So, I appreciate what your point of view. It's one that we considered very carefully. We're trying to weigh all the competing uses on the sidewalks, and we spend and invest in exactly what you're talking about. So, I encourage you to take a look at it. Would love your feedback on the resources. You know, general fund resources of the city, about $11 million. We could spend on anything, go into homeless services. The next highest is 2.9 from Clackamas County, $600,000 from Washington County that has a general fund that's almost as large as ours, $600,000. So we need your help to advocate to other local governments to join us in our level of investment, because there are homeless people all over the county and all over the region.
So. Actually, I'm a member of the Human Rights Council of Washington County, and I have just listened to what you said, and I will pass that on to my fellow council members at our next meeting.
I
wanted to say one more thing. Our commission yesterday, it's not particularly reflected in the letter, but there was a sentiment that we do understand that council, you, all are trying to deal with an issue, and it's an issue for the community, and we're not, I want to put this in the right way, we understand that you're trying to make a difference and make things better for everybody in the city of Portland with this ordinance. We just weren't comfortable with the way it was.
Thank you. I think an Fair important enough. Clarification is that this ordinance doesn't try to package everything together. In a previous sidewalk, in this the safe process, the street access for everyone, there was definitely a bundling of more benches, more services, more in return for something. This is only maybe the Band-Aid. It's the small piece of how do we move around the sidewalks. So there's a lot more that the whole council is committed to working on.
Thank you all very much. I appreciate the dialogue. Sue?
Next will be Jason Barber, Don Suter, Joe Walsh. They will be followed by Dale Hardway, Ken Lloyd, Julie McCurdy.
Mr. Barber, how are you?
Just fine, thank you. For the record, my name is Jason Barber. I'm not doing any kind of presentation or anything. I'm simply reading the notes from my notebook. I volunteer almost monthly with a once a week program in Southeast Portland that serves meals to those in need, no questions asked. So I know that help and services is beneficial to people's lives. To kind of echo some of the things that we just heard, if people have limited places to go on the sidewalks, where are they going to go? And yes, this should be part of a larger framework to expand services and increase their quality and usability. I am concerned that the ordinance and its amendments don't address this situation. Now, I realize that there are people who don't really appreciate sidewalk regulations because it's a regulation on their lifestyle. Well, to put it in perspective, the people through the government pass regulations on homeowners that regulate their lifestyles. The people through the government pass regulations on renters that regulate their lifestyles. And the people through the government pass regulations on drivers and vehicle owners that regulate their lifestyles. This isn't just about, you know, the homeless. In 2008, it was nearly impossible to walk through downtown or, for that matter, the Hawthorne District without being constantly annoyed by petition pushers and people demanding that everyone update their voter registration with them. The conditions leading up to the election this November aren't much better. With more people needing to use sidewalks because TriMet is insistent on cutting transit services at a time when there is an additional need for those services, we should be using the amendments to the proposed ordinance as an opportunity for the city to work with other governments and businesses to encourage expanded services, as well as more jobs and housing suitable for the community located not only along major transit lines, but also closer to one another. I agree with freedom of speech. However, Portlanders with somewhere to go also have the right to say no, which should be respected. As a Portland citizen, I support this ordinance. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Hi, welcome back.
My name is Joe Walsh, and I'm a member of a lot of different organizations. However, what I say today is just my own opinion. I wish you would stop. Don't do this. When I want to understand something in the Senate of the United States, I look to people like Bernie Sanders. Where's Bernie? Where does he stand on this? He is a good temperature taker for me. When I look at the House of Representatives and I try to understand what they're talking about, I look for our own congressman here, DeFazio. And I look to people like Kucinich. Where are they? What are they saying about this? When I look at the local politics, which I freely admit to all of you, I am an amateur. I look at Sisters of the Road. When they say stop, you stop. When the Human Rights Commission says stop, just stop. And say, there is something wrong here. Because these people care about the people that are living on the street. And they're telling you not to do this. But you're going to do it. And you're going to go home tonight and say, we did something to clean up our streets. We did something to flow. We did something to make the streets better. And you are lying to yourself because you're not. You are kicking people to the curb. That's what you're doing. So when you go home tonight, don't look in the mirror and say, I did my best, because you didn't. This is a shame, just a shame. Thank you.
Thanks for your testimony.
Next three
are Dale Hardway, Ken Lloyd, Julie McCurdy. They'll be followed by Jacob Lancey, Trillium Shannon, I.B. Mubarak.
Hi, welcome to the City Council. Glad you're here. Why don't you go ahead and begin?
Sure. First, I'll identify myself. My name is Dale Hardway. I'm a resident of the City of Portland, the Southeast. I'll try to make this as brief as I can. I've heard a lot of testimony, so I'm going to make it easy. I'm going to paint everybody in a box here. If you're going to use the ADA Act as a smokescreen for this ordinance, I represent a few people that suffer with disabilities or have loved ones who suffer with disabilities every day. So let me tell you what our plan will be. Under the ADA Act, there are no exemptions for any stationary